Testing.
So we have his email.
Mike, this is Darren. We were not able to connect to Bruce by both numbers we have, so as far as we know, he was going to join via video, but I didn't know if you just wanted to move forward or not. You do have a quorum. Bob is here present, and then yourself and Randy.
All right, Darren, thank you for that. Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
With that then, it is about 1:35, Monday, May 4th, 2020. This is the meeting of the Utility Finance Oversight Committee. Can I get a roll call?
Chairperson Bennett?
Here.
Vice Chair Bowling?
Here by telephone.
Member Johnston?
Here.
Member Scott? Member Maples? Is Member Maples not here? He's quorum's present.
Thank you. And Darren, for all those involved, would you mind introducing her or going through a roster of who all's in the room?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. I'm Darren Schultz, Public Works Director, and to my right is Pam Ganger with Finance, Brent and Alexa with Far West Engineering, Eddie Qualieri, Water Manager, Andy Hummel, Wastewater Manager. I haven't met our clerk yet.
Danielle Howard, Public Meetings Clerk.
I've talked to you, Danielle. Nice to meet you. And then we also have Bob Johnston here is the only one in person on the board.
All right. Thank you, Darren, and welcome everybody to the meeting. Thank you for attending in person and virtually. We got to move on to public comment first. Public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Utility Finance Oversight Committee, including any matter that is not specifically included on the agenda as an action item. No action may be taken on a matter raised under public comment unless the item has been specifically included on the agenda as an item upon which action may be taken. I assume there's no public in the room. Is there any public remotely?
I see no public comment at this time.
Thank you. No public comment. We'll close that item and we'll move on to action item number one, which is approval of the meeting minutes. Has everybody had a chance to review the minutes? Any comments? And if not, then I would be looking for a motion for approval of the minutes.
Mike, this is Randy. I do have a few clarifications, if possible.
Please do.
On at 1:48:07 mark in the minutes, I believe SCS is referred to as Fluid Conservation Systems. I think more accurately, aren't they financial consulting solutions?
I think that's accurate. Good catch, Randy. Nice try for whoever was trying to get FCS.
And then at 2:52:52, in my copy of the minutes on the third line towards the end, it currently says, for getting improvements done and curating a lot of the stormwater and flooding problems, instead of curating, that should be curing. And then under future agenda items at 3:09:10. Vice Chairperson Bowling requested agendizing the process of how CIPs are selected. I think more accurately that should say process of how projects on the CIP are selected. Those are my only comments.
Thank you, Vice Chair Bowling. Does Bob, do you have any concern with any of those or any changes of your own you'd like to suggest?
No changes.
With that, then I'd be looking for a motion to accept the minutes as amended.
I would move that we accept the minutes of the January 13th, 2020 meeting as amended by Randy.
First by Member Johnson.
I second.
Second by Member Bowling. All those in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Unanimous. That moves us on to item number 2A, possible action, a discussion and possible action regarding the electing a chairperson, vice chairperson for the Utility Finance Oversight Committee. I'm going to, I guess this one's a little awkward to do remotely, but I guess I'll open it up for discussion.
Mike, this is Randy, and I to fly a little bit higher on this topic, there are three members of the board that are their term will be ending in January of next year. I think it would be beneficial. I'm going to put Jeff and Bob in the hot seat, but I think it would be beneficial from the perspective of succession planning and having a chair and vice chair that have their sea legs from 8 to 10 months of experience. So I think in consideration of bringing a chair on, I think it would be beneficial, looking towards the future, is to get people that will be, will have their term go beyond, January of next year, serve as chair and vice chair. Now, certainly, as a vice chair, and perhaps you continuing on as chair throughout the rest of 2020. Just some observations. I'd like to hear what the other thoughts are.
Thanks, Randy. Bob, do you have any thoughts?
I have a question. Randy, which terms expire in January of 2021?
I believe it's Mike, Randy, and Bruce.
Yes, that's correct.
And just for some clarification, Randy, Member Maples has resigned from the committee. So we have a vacancy there right now. Bob, did you have any other questions or thoughts?
No, thank you. That's helpful. And I'm just unclear. Is there a limit to how many times you can be on this particular committee? And are the three whose terms are up eligible to be reappointed to the committee or not?
This is Darren, Public Works Director, and there were no limits in terms set when this committee was set up. And there would be the possibility of the members that are currently on the committee being reappointed by a new Board of Supervisor member starting January of next year. that has happened in the past. So that is allowable, and that certainly could happen, but we wouldn't know that.
Thank you.
This is Todd Reese, Deputy DA, for the record. I would also add that the city has an aspirational goal of rotating chair and co-chair and not serving more than 2 years in any one position. But it's an aspirational goal only. If the committee feels that it would be beneficial to have continuity in any one position, it can do so.
Thank you, Todd. Well, I think, again, this is difficult to do remotely. I guess, well, Randy, you kind of started down the path. I'm going to punt it back at you, if you don't mind. Do you have any thoughts on what would be a good way forward?
I think one approach is to maintain you as chair, and if Bob is agreeable, to have Bob come in as vice chair, thereby putting him in a more confident role come January of next year if he is the only one remaining on the UFOC. So that's a possibility, I think, that has merit. With you maintaining the chair and with Bob as vice chair.
Well, I like the first part of that, Randy.
That was where I was going to go with the second part. How do you feel about that, Bob?
Sir, I'd be willing to serve as vice chair. I would hope that there'd be a little more continuity than to have myself as the only incumbent or remaining member of this, having been on, you know, a year and or 16 months. But I would certainly be willing to serve as vice chair.
Okay. So two questions. One, Randy, is that a motion?
I so move.
Okay. And second question, Todd, do we need that? There's two proposed motions on there. Can we do this under one motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, you can do this under one motion.
Okay. Bob, at the sake of asking you to second for yourself, I'll second for myself. How's that? So we have a motion and a second on the floor. If there's no further discussion, I'll take a vote. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. None opposed, so it's not unanimous, 3-0-0. I think that moves us on to item 2B, which is information only. Sorry, let me switch back to my agenda here. Information only, presentation and discussion regarding the Board of Supervisors' comments and decision recommending or regarding the recommended annual water and wastewater rate increases. Aaron, this has got you attached to it.
Yeah, we're going to just kick it over to Far West and have them provide an update. So we'll make that happen. If you can't see the presentation or anything, those who are videoing in, please let us know.
Hi, this is Alexa Kinsinger with Far West Engineering. I'm here to provide an update on how our presentation for the water and wastewater rate adjustments recommended by the UFOC and us at Far West went on our Board of Supervisors meeting on March 5th of this year. So start with some background. During the presentation, we provided background on the existing rates and connection fees. We went over the financial policies and FCS model assumptions utilized throughout the water and wastewater rate models. We also reviewed the process that Far West Engineering took to update those water and wastewater rate models. And then we presented results for the proposed rate adjustments with the idea of them being effective fiscal years 2021 through 2025. Quickly to go over a summary of the financial policies that govern these recommendations. The first is to maintain an operating reserve in the wastewater fund of 30 to 45 days and in the water fund of 60 to 90 days of O&M expense cash on hand. The model assumes that when the operating reserves exceed this target of O&M days, excess cash is earmarked to the capital account to help cover capital project costs. The second policy establishes the capital account minimum target balance at 2% of the system fixed assets for each system. The third is within the capital funding, the rate models assume that capital projects that are not funded through the capital fund balance will be funded through bond sales. Fourth is to maintain a debt service coverage ratio or factor of at a minimum 1x the annual debt service. We move forward with an internal goal of 1.25 times the annual debt service. Additionally, we strive to achieve a debt to equity ratio goal of no greater than 50% debt to 50% equity within each utility. The fifth goal is system reinvestment funding that's funded through rates using a percentage of the annual depreciation expense as a benchmark for the appropriate funding level on an annual basis. So within the water model, the proposed rates maintain this system reinvestment funding at 100% each year throughout the study period. This was also achieved by SCS Group back in 2018. In the sewer model, we were able to achieve 100% system reinvestment funding by fiscal year 2025. It's currently being funded at 80%. The sixth goal is a list of different economic and financial factors that help govern the forecast basis for future revenues, expenditures, and connection fee increases within each model. These factors include general cost inflation, construction cost inflation, labor and benefits inflationary factors, as well as the Engineering News Record Construction Cost Index and some customer growth factors that were utilized to forecast future costs and future growth. So all of these financial policies governing our recommendations, we presented this to the Board of Supervisors and came up with the wastewater model proposes a 3.5% yearly increase across the board to all customer classes starting July 1, 2020. At 3.5%, we meet all financial policies and goals that we just discussed. Additionally, within the wastewater model, 3.5% rate increases uses cash to fund the CIP through fiscal year 2025, so no bond sales will be needed. Additionally, as a result of the last UFOC meeting we had, we were able to fund system reinvestment or depreciation funding by 100% in fiscal year 2025 at 3.5% rate increases yearly. Next, I will go into the water model results. So this was not discussed at the last UFOC meeting, but since then there have been two alternatives developed for the water model and their proposed rates. The original alternative was presented to the UFOC in January, and it included the Quill plant upgrades slated for fiscal years 2024 and 2025 within the CIP. That's a large project that's coming up in the near future. And this resulted in proposed rate increases of 3% annually to meet all those financial policies. Due to the current climate and the potential for very low interest rates on bonds, it was proposed to explore an alternative that we call Alternative A. This, however, was not presented at the UFOC in January. But Alternative A considers moving these large upgrades to the Quill treatment plant from fiscal years 2024 and 2025 up to fiscal years 2021 and 2022 to potentially benefit from these lower loan interest rates and to benefit from increased treatment capacity at Quill as soon as feasible. So this Alternative A resulted originally in the proposed rate increases of 4.5% yearly in the first 3 years of the rate study, 2021 through 2023, and then 3% yearly in fiscal years 2024 and 25, and to meet all the financial policies. This slide here just shows the proposed CIP under Alternative A. As you can see down kind of in the middle of the chart, that the Quill treatment plant rehabilitation is slated for fiscal year 21 and 22. Additionally, this current CIP as shown here shows the water line replacement and rehab program. The third line item down is fully funded at around $2.1 million all 5 years of the study period. I will discuss this in 1 second. I just wanted to point it out for now. So those were the alternatives presented to the Board of Supervisors, and some input we received from that was the wastewater rates. They agreed with the recommendations we made and approved for a 3.5% yearly increase over the study period. And then the water rates is where we received further detail on in input. So they did prefer Alternative A because there is a large potential to benefit from lower interest rates on the bonds. And there's great benefit to the utility and customers if the Quill plant upgrades could take place as soon as possible. However, they were not completely satisfied with raising rates those first 3 years, 2021 through 23, to 4.5%. So they requested us at Far West and city staff to work together to figure out how we could modify the CIP to keep project costs down in order to keep rates down as close to 3% as possible. So from this, we have done some analysis since then, and determined that if we reduce that water line rehab and replacement line item I pointed out in the CIP on the previous slides to around 700,000 the first 3 years, and if we utilize a portion of the funds available within the system reinvestment fund, which are funds available for utilizing for repair and replacement projects because you're reinvesting into your system. If we utilize a portion of those funds and minimize the costs of waterline replacement and rehab, it is feasible to keep water rates at 3% annual increases through the entire study period, 2021 through 2025. This has not been formally presented to the Board of Supervisors. I'm just providing an update to you all at the UFOC to have an idea of where we stand on that. So additionally, some input we received from the Board of Supervisors, both utilities and rates were approved. The recommendation to index both water and wastewater rates to a CPI with a minimum of 0% and a maximum of 3% annual increases starting July 1, 2025. So starting as soon as these recommendations expire, these proposed rate increases. Additionally, they approved providing $10,000 of funding per each of those enterprise funds towards the Utility Ratepayers Assistance Program, also known as URAP. And lastly, they recommended that city staff maintain updated rate models throughout the study period to track the impacts to both utilities. Some general comments made were that they requested that city staff continue to work as efficiently as feasible and cost effectively so that the customer receives good service for the amount of money they're putting into the utilities. And then they also requested that the next rate study consider establishing a rate stability fund that will help the utility when water usage or customer growth fluctuates in the future. So this next step slides, I kind of already touched base on this, but we did conduct a couple different model runs to attempt to achieve the Quill treatment plant upgrade in 2021 and 2022 while maintaining a 3% increase yearly. Right now, currently, I believe city staff is working on a business impact statement and municipal code revisions for approval at a future meeting.
Yeah, this is Andy Hummel for the record. On that front, the code revisions are drafted, the business impact statements are ready to go out. What's happened since that meeting at the Board of Supervisors and now is with all the COVID-19 stuff, there's really a lot of the businesses aren't open to send a statement out to. So we've been holding off for now.
And that actually concludes my presentation, but I am happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Alexis. Sorry. Bob, Brandy, you got any questions?
I have a question.
I do.
Go ahead, Randy.
Well, thanks, Bob. With the, I think it's great moving Quill, accelerating the construction of that. The question I have, and it's more for my own education, that And I did look at the Board of Supervisors discussion of this topic. And to apply money from the water line replacement and rehab to the quill plant, number one, can those revenues be taken from other line items within the CIP, or should it just come from the water line rehab and replacement? And I guess that's a question for staff, really.
So I may have missed the first part of that question. Is the question, can we supplement other lines in the CIP? We'd prefer not to, just keep it, you know, how we have it planned. But,
I remember Bowling, I think the way staff looked at it was of the CIP for 21, 22, and 23, what did we feel was most important, and it's all important, but what was most important? And so that waterline replacement line item is where we thought we could push back. It's not that we won't do those projects, it's that we would push those projects back for a few years before we got to them. So that was staff's recommendation back to Far West, that that's where we would temporarily use the money from.
Okay, great. That answers the question I have. My second question is, does this affect us meeting the system reinvestment financial policy?
Alexa Kinsinger back on. No, it does not. We actually have at this current proposed rate, system reinvestment funding would be funded 100% throughout the study period. The only, what I'm recommending we do to pursue alternative A is utilize some of that funding to cover the initial bond costs associated with the quill treatment plant project. So money will still be going into the system reinvestment fund throughout the study period. We'll just be utilizing some of that money.
Just to confirm, we will meet that financial policy goal.
Yes.
Thank you. That's all I have, Mike.
Thank you, Randy. Bob?
Thank you, Mike. On the quill treatment plant rehabilitation, moving up the timeline of that, would completion of those, Eddie, allow Carson City to treat the Marlette-Hobart system to the safe drinking water standards?
Yes, it would. It would allow us to use the water and all the water that we could take from them and put it into the system. Right now, we can use it in different ways. We recharge with that water, but to get it into the system, we need to treat it at a higher quality. So that would allow us to do that.
Thank you. And I had one further question, and that really had to do with the rate effective date for the rates. We're talking about both wastewater and water. Are we still looking at July 1, 2020, or based on feedback, has that date been moved back or is likely to be moved back by the Board of Supervisors? Thank you.
Yeah, for the time that we need to get the business impact statement done, we're thinking we're probably looking at October 1, so basically a three-month delay.
And a follow-up question on that, Andy, does that change any of the financial parameters here, delaying the start date?
Yeah, we've had Far West look at that as well. We feel that a 3-month, we could absorb that. We did have to make some minor tweaks to our CIP for fiscal year 21 that Pam will be showing us here shortly on the upcoming budget items. But, yeah, it's still doable.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Alexa, I have one question. I was confused on the CIP that was presented. It showed waterline replacement rehab funding at $750,000 in 20. 21, it was 2.04, and then it went up to 2.1. Was that the plan that was approved by the Board of Supervisors, or was that the plan that assumed 4.5% increase for those first 3 years?
Yes, this CIP shown here, it assumes a 4.5% increase the first 3 years and then 3% increase the following 2 years. So in order to accommodate 3% increases, the water line rehab and replacement program is decreased the first 3 years to about $700,000.
Each of the 3 years?
Yes.
Okay. That was my question. Thank you. If there's no other questions, I guess we'll open it up for public comment. Todd, I guess I'm not sure how to do this. It doesn't sound like there's any public comment on the phone or in the room. Still have to go through it.
Mr. Chair, it's your option to hold public comment after each item. Generally, what we've been doing due to COVID-19 is holding public comment only at the beginning and only at the end. If there's anybody on for public comment that can comment, then you could allow them.
Okay, well, I appreciate that feedback. Darren, if there is anybody in the room that wants to make public comment, please let me know at the end of the item. Otherwise, we're just going to do what Todd has suggested and hold everything until the end.
Will do.
So with that, if there's no further questions or discussion, Andy or Bob, I guess we'll close item 2B as it's for information only and move on to 2C. Hearing none, we'll move on to item 2C, which is for possible action, discussion and possible action to recommend to the Board of Supervisors a stormwater rate structure and rate increase that will generate additional revenue up to an additional $1.4 million to support an improved citywide stormwater program. Darren, this one's got your name on it too.
Yes, I again, we're going to just kick this directly over to Far West. We've been here a number of times and just continuing to refine this program. And so I feel like we've got it right this time, but we'll see. We'll see what you think. Brent.
Thank you. This is Brent Farr with Far West for the record. I want to just give you a little bit of a refresher on where we left off. The last time we met was in January. So a review of some of the things that were discussed and established at that meeting. Number one, that we're shooting for a $3.2 million revenue requirement, and that the committee had recommended that the grouped impervious method be presented to the Board of Supervisors. So those were the some key decisions made there. But what the committee wanted to hear in addition was some additional information regarding a mitigation credit concept, and also some information about how these rates would be phased in. Go to the next slide there. This is just a recap of what the grouped impervious area approach looks like with the existing rate structure at the top and the proposed rate structure below. And so you'll notice that the rate increases are fairly significant. As a reminder, I think that overall, the revenue was recommended to increase by 64%. And so you see for some customers that increase is going to be quite significant. And those proposed rates are based on the impervious area of the property for everyone except for single family properties, which would be at a monthly flat rate of $9.34. The rest are based on the amount of impervious area on the parcel. So let's talk about the credit concept a little bit. We had talked about a credit at the previous meeting, and it was based on a concept that parcels that had stormwater detention would be given a credit of some kind based on the premise that by having stormwater detention facilities, it would be a benefit to the system by impounding and then delaying the release of those stormwaters over time. However, when I discussed that concept with staff, they initially were not very supportive of that concept, and here are some reasons why. Most of the parcels that would be eligible for the credit would already, in a sense, be receiving a subsidy from other customers. And so the large and the very large customers, you know, their rates would be much higher than what's published there, going as high as over $1,000 a month in some cases. And so the fact that we've structured this such that their rates stay reasonable, some of them are already getting a fairly significant mitigation in a sense to begin with. Customers with detention facilities, it was pointed out by staff that, you know, they're simply meeting code to begin with. And as such, they didn't feel that there was a basis for receiving a credit just for the fact of meeting a code requirement. There are a lot of other codes that people have to meet in building and development that are not eligible for credits. Outside of the downtown corridor, most of the commercial properties have on-site detention. And what we're getting at there is that the vast majority of the commercial accounts have on-site detention. And so there really isn't a way of rewarding one over another, per se, for having the detention because most of them have to have it. There was also something pointed out to me that I didn't realize is that some properties have had to make other types of stormwater improvements, both on and off site, that would not be covered by a credit system. And therefore, you know, how to handle that and make the system fair. The method of calculating the credit could be challenging. It does take some engineering judgment on a case-by-case basis to determine how much of a benefit the on-site detention is to the downstream system. And so there's a bit of work there that needs to be done. And then they pointed out that low-impact development requirements are coming soon that might possibly add complexity to the rebate issue. And so for those reasons, staff was not real receptive of the concept that we originally had proposed. And working with them, we developed a different credit concept that I'd like to explain now. Staff suggested a credit concept based on documented inspection and maintenance of the stormwater detention facilities. And here are some of the basic concepts for that approach. Number one, the customer must apply for the credit. And so if they have an on-site detention system, they would have to make application to receive the credit. And then on an annual basis, they'd have to document that they've inspected and performed maintenance on their on-site detention and conveyance facilities such that they're in good working order. Staff has mentioned that in a lot of cases, individuals that have these systems don't necessarily care for them on a regular basis, and they need maintenance. And so this would ensure that they're all in good working order. Then the applicant would submit a brief report. We don't have a proposed format for that, but we'd like to keep that simple, with just simple documentation of photos or information on repairs or improvements that were made. It could be very brief. And by so doing, this would actually save the utility some time and money, because these inspections and maintenance and other things are sometimes then the burden that's placed on the utility staff. And so there would be an actual cost associated with this benefit to the utility. We determined that the credit would be worth 1 month of billing. And so, you know, depending on what size of a customer you are, your credit could differ depending on the amount of your monthly bill. This concept was developed with input from staff and received the support of staff. Let's take a look now at the a concept for phase-in of these rates. What you'll see there, again, is the existing rate structure at the top and then a proposed rate structure at the bottom that is a phase-in approach. And so for the residential customers, given that their rates are going to go up by about 64%, we've done this over a two-year time step, going halfway the first year and then to the $9.34 the second year. And our assumption here, and you know, Darren could weigh on this later as to the schedule, but this was assuming a January 1st, 2021 start. For the small properties, given that their rate is only going to be $30, and that's at or below the existing rates for each of the customer classes, we didn't feel that a phase-in was necessary there. But for the medium, large, and very large, it's a stepwise approach. For those that have kind of the lower rate impacts, we do it over 2 years and then 3 years for the large and then the full four-year implementation for the very large, giving them an opportunity to absorb the impact of the rate. And, of course, that does have an impact on revenues, but given that the rate increase is fairly significant, we think that that's justified. So the final slide here is just a summary of things to recommendations to consider. First, to approve the grouped impervious rate method. Then to approve the stormwater rate phase-in approach and the stormwater credit system approach. We also would recommend that the UFOC approve indexing of stormwater rates to the CPI beginning July 1st of 2024, which is after the last part of the phase-in. So from there, it would adjust automatically based on the CPI. Also consider recommending that $10,000 of funding, just as we have done or will do for the water and wastewater funds, be set aside in the utility ratepayer assistance program, and that these rates be reviewed at a minimum every 5 years. So that is my brief report on stormwater, and would love to respond to your questions at this time.
Thank you, Brent. I'll bring it back to the committee. I'll call on people rather than trying to talk over each other on the virtual. Bob, I'll ask you first. Do you have any questions or comments?
Thank you, Mike. On the Brent, on the new stormwater credit concept, are we talking, as far as the different customer classes, are we really talking large and very large, or would that also apply to medium? I mean, where are these customers? How are they broken?
Yeah, Andy might know a little better in terms of how they're distributed, but first of all, just in general, the credit would apply to anybody that had the facility. I think your question is more, where are those facilities among these customer classes? Andy, do you have a good feel for that in terms of size of parcel and whether?
Yeah, it's really any of them could potentially have one. It largely depends on the infrastructure that's available there and the capacity downstream. So we, you know, a small fast food site might have something that you don't even see underground, a storage tank, something like that. And some of the big, you know, industrial parcels that are open land around them may not actually have anything. So it's pretty spread among those classes.
And so it looks to me like the new idea is really just to provide an incentive for keeping these detention facilities, maintaining them. Is that fair, or is that the thought?
Yeah, that was the thought, to provide that incentive to not only keep up on the maintenance, remind them that those exist on their site, and to help with the reporting side.
And I would just, you know, I guess my comment would be that the report to get the credit would have to be fairly straightforward, otherwise it just wouldn't pencil out for a lot of these customers to prepare a report to get a, you know, $120 or $240 credit.
Yeah, we're assuming it's going to be a you know, a simple form. You have the, you know, facilities on your site. Have you inspected them over the last year? Are they working? Type situation that they could report on.
Okay, and Mike, I had one more, if that's okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, as far as the phase-in on approach, I guess I'm struck by the contrast between water and wastewater and stormwater, where you're looking at 3% or 3.5% over 5-year phase-in, and then stormwater, you're saying, well, we can go 64% in 1 year, 32% in the first 2 years, at least for the residential customers. What's the distinction there? Is it the revenue need is greater in storm? The immediate revenue need is greater in stormwater, or is that just a matter of? Could those increases also be phased in on a consistent glide path with water and wastewater rate increases?
Yeah, I think you've hit it right on the head, is that the stormwater utility has been underfunded. And, you know, this came to the UFOC and Board of Supervisors, I think, some time ago, and we made a little progress. They said, you know, take it back and, you know, rework it and things. And so we've kind of, you know, lost ground for a while there. So the rate increase is significant. The revenue requirement 64% above what it currently is to get the utility fully funded. If we took the approach of a, you know, 3 to 3.5% increase, we'd probably never get there, because you'd just be keeping pace with inflation at that point. So it is, I agree, it's very different. But the circumstances are also vastly different.
But if I may chime in on that also, if you look at the average bill or dollars out of pocket between the two rates, the two utilities, so for water, a 3% increase, that's going to be average maybe $3 a month is how much is actually being paid for that increase. On stormwater, if you increase it by 30%, that's going to be on average a little less than $3
a month on the customer's bill. So even though the increase is much bigger, because it's such a stormwater is such a low rate monthly now, the actual out-of-pocket number is very 3% in water compared to 30% in wastewater. It's about the same, pretty close to the same number. So I think that could be a different way of looking at it. The rate increase percentage is much greater, but the actual out-of-pocket is pretty similar. But where that sweet spot is, we're open to hear suggestions.
And just to clarify, I wasn't suggesting 3%, but just a five-year phase-in as compared to 1-2 first-year, second-year phase-in. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Johnson. Also, for the record, it appears Member Scott has joined us, although I can't see him.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes. How are you today?
Okay. You're getting the best part of me then. I'm sorry, I'm not, I can see you, Mike, but I don't have my camera on my laptop here, so I am listening and I am here, been here for about 10 minutes, so I apologize for my tardiness, and I'm at home dealing with a well that won't work. So, I got kind of behind, and I'm happy to join, but it's a good thing you can't see me.
Long hair and all, probably, huh?
Right.
I
did have a question or two.
You want to jump in now? Go for it.
Well, if I could, just since I've already interrupted, I'm wondering on the credit. You know, if I'm sitting there with a credit, I mean a pond that I've created for stormwater detention, and I had to put up the money for that to begin with as a condition of approval, but it does provide some benefit, not just to me, but to the system overall. Is 1 month's credit really enough for somebody to maintain it? You know, if I'm going to save $120 or $240 in a couple of years, and I've got a pond that's got vegetation or needs some other maintenance, I don't think there's much incentive there for a one-month credit. And I don't know, I may have missed some of the earlier discussion at the staff level, but I'm wondering if that's really enough to make it worth people's while to really maintain those.
Andy, Darren, do you have any thoughts to add to that?
Yeah, this is Andy. I think it's a starting point. If we wanted to look at going a larger credit, we definitely could. We match that. It's pretty close to the staff time that we would save on the city is why we started there. But, yeah, we're open to suggestions. From that maintenance standpoint, I do agree with Member Scott that it's not a huge incentive to maintain for sure.
This is Darren. They're supposed to maintain it now. I mean, without a credit, once you put it in with your development, it's part of, you know, it's the business owner's responsibility to maintain those. The problem is the city does not have a inspection or reinforcement program. I mean, we don't have any funded staff to, you know, but we could go out currently to businesses who have put them in, and if they're, you know, if they're not functioning properly, we could notify them. We could actually cite them, is my understanding. So, it's in our toolbox to do that now. So would this in fact cause them to do a little more maintenance so they could get this credit? I guess we don't know that. And then the credit amount, as stated before, the higher we make that, the higher we have to increase rates somewhere else to make the overall bottom line match.
Thank you, Darren. Yeah, I think that was the question I was trying to get to. Is there a code enforcement provision? I mean, this is not intended, as I understand it, to be the tool to get folks to go out there and maintain. It's just a benefit to them of doing their own maintenance and then not requiring, I guess, the city staff to go out and do that observation.
That's right.
Bruce, anything else?
No, I think most of these are pretty, the ones that exist are pretty site specific. So they're probably more directly related to the properties they serve rather than having any kind of a regional benefit. But if there was a regional benefit to them, I can see the value of being partners with them as opposed to having them have to be enforced, if you will, to keep them in and functioning. I don't have a strong feeling. I think we're going to get some feedback from not only the Board of Supervisors, but the users as well. So we can see what their thoughts are and see how it works in practice. Until we have a flood, nobody pays attention, and then it's kind of like, did things really work? So this might be a way to start the process of ongoing maintenance.
Thank you, Bruce. Randy, do you want to chime in?
Sure, I'm happy to. For the sake of being somewhat organized, if we can go to the slide that has stormwater rate recommendations to consider, and we can just go down those bullet points if possible. Overall, I think the group impervious rate method, I like it. I really do. I think it's as close as we're going to get, I think, to something that's reasonable, and to the extent that we can be fair and equitable, which I mentioned, I think, when we started down this road, the equity is in the eye of the beholder. I think we're close to it. I like this group impervious rate method. The second bullet, approved the stormwater rate phase-in approach. I like that. As was stated earlier, the stormwater program is really hurting, really hurting. So I think the aggressive, if it can be viewed as aggressive, phase-in, I think it's appropriate. We have flooding problems all over the place, and we've got to address them. The stormwater credit system, I think that some form of credit has to be incorporated. What form that takes, it could be, As mentioned earlier, I think we're just going to have to start down the road with what we think is best and allow the public works staff to move ahead in a diligent manner of applying it fairly. And then if it comes time later on, then we can always, as a committee, make suggestions if there's some challenges. But I think it's important we start in one direction. The next bullet, the indexing of the rates to the CPI. I'm not sure is there a basis for you selecting the CPI as opposed to the Engineering News Record construction cost index or any other metric. Because I think, if I'm not mistaken, in some of those other, whether it's the water, wastewater rates, they looked at the Engineering News Record, CCI. Is that correct, Alexa?
Is that right? Andy's saying no, and Alexa's okay. Saying yes.
Now, the connection fees are currently tied to the ENR CCI. We were looking at the consumer price index on rates because that tends to follow more of the cost of living type.
Like insurance and so forth. Yeah. The cost of employment.
Okay, thanks for that clarification.
Yeah.
Comparing the indexing of the rates compared to the final bullet of the rate refresh, can somebody describe the difference between those two?
What do we... Well, yeah, so...
Or before you get started, Brent, or does it relate back to... I think it was Supervisor Bagwell that brought it up. Perhaps instead of conduct a rate refresh, maybe monitor it.
Yeah, and I think that, Darren, does the city actually have a policy in their code, do you know, to do something every... No, okay. Yeah, so that's a good question. I mean, I think at a minimum we've seen... communities that at a minimum tie their rates to the CPI or CCI for connection fees, for example, do pretty well year over year in keeping pace. Because sometimes things happen. You know, you get delays in responding to these, or we did a rate study for the – it was actually a connection fee study for the city of Reno. And they had their connection fees attached to the CCI for a period of time, and then it lapsed in like 2014 or something. And then they asked us to kind of take a look at it. And as it turns out, if they had just continued on that CCI over that period of time, that 5-year period of time, they'd be about where they need to be. But since they didn't, now they're looking at increases of like, you know, 15-20%, something like that. So it's just kind of a nice assurance that you're actually going to do pretty well if you stay with those CCI CPI indexes. But it's also good every so often, 3 to 5 years, to take a good look at the whole program. Just how you're trending and how your reserves look. And so I think it's good to every 5 years to kind of do a refresh, even if you are tied to those indexes.
Randy, if I may comment on this as well, that last bullet, to me, it fits. I understood the direction we got from the Board of Supervisors on water and wastewater in terms of we kind of feel like we've honed this down to a well-run machine in terms of the model for water and wastewater. On the stormwater side of things, I do not feel that comfortable. And even with this plan that we have going forward, just like water and stormwater, once we started out on it 7 years ago, we weren't really sure where we would end up. And so that's why we felt it was appropriate to do the refresh. And so on stormwater, I look at it a little differently. Like we really, you know, 5 years from now, 5 years after this gets enacted, we really do need to go back and revisit the data and our assumptions and kind of see how we're tracking. So it feels a little different to me anyway. That's just my opinion.
Okay, thank you for that explanation, both Brent and Darren. So as far as the timing, are we looking at, based on this, the bullet list of the recommendations, are we looking at an adjustment to the stormwater rates July 1st of 2024 and a rate refresh that same year, or is that 5 years subsequent to the first CPI adjustment in 2024? When does a rate refresh take place?
This is Darren. Again, in my opinion would be that it would be 5 years from whenever the first rate increase takes place. So you don't want to do a refresh until all of the phase-in, you know, it's all complete, so that you can, you know, you can look back at what your assumptions were and then whether or not you're meeting it. So I think our phase-in is over a 4-year period for stormwater. So I think it'd be appropriate to have the refresh perhaps in the fifth year. And in terms of when the rate increase would actually start, we're, as we talked about on water and wastewater, that date being a little up in the air right now. And right now for stormwater, the way we built everything would be January 1 of 2021 is when stormwater would go into effect. But we just want to note that with the disruption that we've had these last few months in an unknown economy, we just want to be careful, but that, you know, that's our plan right now. Is that kind of.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Now I'm really going to switcheroo on you. I'm going to go to the stormwater credits concept. Could a new development apply for a credit, not having 12 months of payment history?
Hey, Randy, this is Andy. Yeah, I think we'd work that out in code. I think you'd have to have been a owner of that property for a certain amount of time to be able to get that code. Yeah, we'd have to consider that if they've been paying their bill for the, you know, first month of that year, then yeah, it doesn't make sense to they get that one free too.
Okay, thanks, Andy. I think there's what we're looking at is the concept, and I appreciate that. The details will come in time when it's due for implementation. But really, that's pretty much the sum of my questions at this point. And again, I like the work that both Alexa and Brent and staff have done. Back to you, Mike.
Thank you, Randy. Randy live from the helicopter. No. Randy did a good job of kind of ordering his thoughts based on those recommendations to consider. I'm going to do the same. He said it well on the grouped impervious rate method. I think it's probably the best and most equitable way that we are we're going to achieve for this go around. So I'm in favor of that. The phased-in approach, I recognize, you know, when you talk about a 60-some percent increase, that probably raises a lot more attention than the fact that we're only talking a few dollars a month. But that's for the residential customer. Obviously, the larger properties are going to see a much larger increase than that. So I'm in support of the phase-in approach. I do have a question, and I think I know the answer, but I'm just going to raise it for the sake of discussion. Have we considered what the impact of phasing in the rate structure has on our financial, on meeting our financial policies? And I say I think I know the answer because if I scanned ahead, it looks like the Stormwater Fund is meeting its financial policy objectives now, but yet that's with a greatly reduced CIP. So I don't know if that was a question or more of a statement, but I'll just leave that hanging in the air, Darren or Brent, if you want to add something to that.
No, I think that's a great observation. I mean, in order to get to the goal of a fully, what we call probably a fully funded stormwater utility, obviously it's not going to happen until the end of the phase-in. But that said, the staff here have done a good job of adjusting their budget to the revenue that they do have. And so I think that their budget just grows as the revenue grows, and so therefore they're able to meet their financial policies as they go along.
Thank you for that. And then a similar comment on the stormwater credit. Candidly, I don't think I'm really in favor of the stormwater credit just because of the point I think was made earlier. Those larger properties being the ones that tend to require the stormwater infrastructure to begin with have already been heavily subsidized by the residential ratepayers. But, you know, again, I'm kind of trying to find somewhere in the center, and I recognize that a credit is appropriate to getting as many folks on board with moving this guy forward. So same idea or same question, I guess, back to you, Brent. Do you have a magnitude of what that credit could mean from an impact standpoint to the revenues generated in the Stormwater Fund? And again, is that a detriment to the city being able to meet their financial policy objectives?
Yeah, thanks for that. Andy had me take a look at that this morning, and I'm grateful he had me do that. So here's what I did. I took all of the non-residential accounts to determine what the worst case scenario would be. And if every single one of them had a detention facility and qualified for the rebate, it would amount to $127,000 in change on an annual basis, which would be close to 4% of the total projected revenue of $3.2 million. Now, we know that that would be the absolute worst case because not every non-residential parcel has a detention basin. So if you assumed that half of them did, then you'd have to then try to figure out how many of them would actually apply for the credit because, you know, some are just going to simply ignore it. So let's say half of those that have a facility apply for the credit, you've got the annual impact down to about $32,000 or about 1% of the total revenues. So that's kind of how I looked at it anyway. And I don't think that would impact their ability to meet goals.
I appreciate that. That helps me, I guess, wrap my head around, you know, I can support the credit more so certainly than I just said I was in favor of just because it isn't a huge impact to the system. And it does provide some, using the term credit, I guess, too much. It does provide some credits back to those folks that did make those investments anyways. The stormwater indexing rates, I'm not in favor of these only because I feel like it allows the utility to go up to put their rate structure on autopilot. I think utility is, as everything in the utility, is a rate structure just the same. It needs to be routinely managed. And, you know, again, I don't think I would die on that hill because it's something that is probably good financial sense. But the reality is, in my opinion, regardless of whether we decide we're going to fall back on a CPI or the CCI or whatever, the index ultimately is adopted to be, I still think that needs to be brought back in front of the board in a public forum to say, you know, the CPI last year was 2.7%, and that approximately matches our projections of what we need to increase the revenue in our fund, and therefore we're recommending that the board, or we're just notifying the board that, you know, the CPI is appropriate, or something along those lines. But again, it goes back to, I believe all the utilities need to take an active role in managing their rate structure. So a little bit of a soapboxing there for you on that one. The $10,000 UREP, I think that's a great add. We've been doing it in the other funds. And then the last one, the rate refresh, I guess that ties back to the stormwater bit. It needs to be on the front of everybody's brain. My power bill goes up, my natural gas bill goes up, my fuel bill, recently it's been going down, but usually gas prices go up. I mean, everything goes up, and it's unusual, or it's unreasonable, I should say, for a municipal utility to, or ratepayers, I should say, a municipal utility to expect that we can go 2, 3, 4, 5 years without rate increases when everything that utility has to pay for is still going up, including salaries and medical benefits and so on and so forth. So I think having the combination of those two, it gets to my point of it needs to be on the front of everybody's brain. So I'm in favor of that. I guess that's the end of my two cents. We've got a lot to go around with. And I know, Bruce, you had mentioned some items on the credit system. Bob, you had mentioned some items on the phase-in approach. But I think what we're looking for is a motion in some manner for staff to be able to move forward to the Board of Supervisors with something that resembles the recommendations on that one slide with whatever modifications the committee wishes to throw in. So that being said, does anybody have any further discussion they'd like to, or any further comments they'd like to discuss with the group? I guess I'll go around the horn real quick. Bob, you got to go first. Do you want to go first again?
Sure. I did, as I understand, Mike, on your concern about index stormwater rates to the CPI, you're concerned that this would increase could take place automatically without board review. As I was understanding it, is that the board would just look to that as a guide and say it'd be a policy. But I'm assuming the Board of Supervisors could agree or disagree on a year-by-year basis with that, or how I'm just a little unclear as to how that would work. I was assuming that it would be subject to board approval in every year, but that's just a comment. I don't know.
This is Darren, and I think that bears trying to further flesh out a little bit. I think the way that this could work in kind of the way I took the feedback on the water and wastewater CPIs is that they would be automatic. But when we go to prepare the utility budget each year, as we're going to present here in these next items for this next fiscal year, we would address whatever that CPI is, what the rate is for that year, what the increase that brings in, and what that increase is going towards in terms of the financial policy. So it would be all part of the budget preparation for that utility fund and would be made part of that presentation both before the UFOC and then ultimately before the BOS, as to we would be recognizing the CPI, So in this case, we would say the CPI for this last year is 2.2% for the water fund that attributes to such and such a dollar amount. If you look at our budget or our CIP, you can see increases here, there, or where as to what that went towards. So that's kind of the way I think it would play out in terms of addressing each year how that came up. But I'm just suggesting that. Nothing's been said.
So, Darren, if I could jump in real quick. If that, trying to understand, I guess, say a different way, then the Board of Supervisors would have the authority to either accept or reject adoption of the CPI through the yearly budgeting process, but it's not specific to the rates, right? I mean, there wouldn't be a separate discussion related to or regarding rate increases every year after the CPI, or if it was just to roll into the CPI. Or maybe I'm...
Mike, the latter is that it's not a, it wouldn't be brought forward as, you know, for action to accept or not accept the CPI, but the discussion would be rolled into the overall budget discussion that we were having, and then they would either adopt that budget as submitted or B, you know, adopt it with changes.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for that that comment, Darren. I guess I would say, Mike, I just going down the bullet points here on the slide, I like the grouped impervious rate method. I could agree with the stormwater rate phase-in approach. It gives me pause only because I think that stormwater is less understood by Carson City's ratepayers, if I'm any example, than paying for water and sewer. But I can also, I'm also in favor of planning to avoid these floods rather than figuring out what went wrong after street floods. And on the stormwater credit system, I think it's a good compromise. The way I see it, it's just an incentive to maintain an existing detention system. On the CPI, I'm comfortable with that if it's paired with this rate refresh every 5 years. And I think that, you know, that's obviously if it's driving unwarranted rate increases, I think that certainly could be fleshed out as we go forward, or by staff and the supervisors. And then I do agree with the $10,000 funding for the utility ratepayer assistance program. So those are my comments, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Bruce, I'll bring it back to you one more time. Anything else to add?
Yeah, just a little bit on the CPI. I understand exactly where you're coming from, but the reality is that we exist as a committee because there was no programmed consideration of rates on water and sewer. And so I like the idea of having it come to the board as part of the budget process. As a pre-programmed consumer price index or whatever, and a kind of a reporting that it's 2% or 3% or whatever the number happens to be. And the board does have the opportunity to back off of it, but I really don't think creating an annual rate consideration for staff to present to the board in the political climate that we typically seem to have is really in the best long-term interest of managing the utility. So I do like the CPI, and the board does have the opportunity, I think, to visit that. But I really prefer to see it kind of baked into the system, but not irretrievably, you know. I think it just is one of those things where I'd rather see it go unless there was a major concern, because otherwise there's going to be a concern every time when you bring it up. And it's so easy to put off because it's only 2% or 3%. And pretty soon we're kind of like where Reno is that we heard earlier. So that would be my thought. The other recommendations I'm comfortable with, and I don't have a strong feeling on the credits. I think some of the discussion kind of shed some light on that, so I'm fine with the recommendation there.
Thank you for that, Bruce. Randy, back to you one more time. Do you have any closing thoughts?
I'm supportive of the recommendation. All six bullet points.
Thank you for that, Randy. With that, then, everybody's had their piece. I will open it up to the committee to make a motion.
I move.
I'm happy to go down that road.
I move the committee accept the stormwater rate recommendations. The bullet points on the side here are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different recommendations. Do we need them spelled out?
No, Bob, I think that's probably appropriate, unless Todd has different thoughts.
Second it.
This is Todd Reese, the record. No, I don't have anything different thoughts for it.
Thank you. Bob made the motion, Randy seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor, aye.
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 And aye. So motion passes 4-0-0. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, staff. Thank you, Brent and Alexa, for a long road on the stormwater rates. Moving on to item 2D, for possible action, discussion and possible action regarding the fiscal year 2021 wastewater fund budget's compliance with adopted financial policies, recommending that the Board of Supervisors approve the wastewater fund budget for fiscal year 2021. Pam.
Thank you. Pam Ganger, Deputy CFO, for the record. All right. There's a few things that I wanted to talk about up front that apply to all of the utility funds. First off, the tentative budgets did go to the Board of Supervisors already in April last month, and there were a few changes from that budget to what you see today, and they are identified in each of the funds' highlight slides. So I'll try to point them out as we go, but they are there. There were not very many changes. Secondly, I wanted to point out that there were no rate increases contemplated in this budget, in any of these budgets for these funds. And that's, of course, just due to the, you know, inability to determine when those rates would begin. Also, across all three funds, I just want to mention that salary and benefit increases include merit increases and employee retirements. No new employees and medical benefits were reduced in each of the funds. Originally, we had estimated a 10% increase, but then we got some final numbers from our insurance companies, and it looks like we negotiated a 0% increase. So So I reduced all those numbers, so that's good news. Also across all three funds, services and supplies have moderate increases. And finally, I just want to mention that the citywide capital spending at the time of the tentative budget had not yet been solidified, just simply due to revenue reductions and evolving capital plans. But at this time, they've been completed and they're brought forth in this budget presentation for each of the funds. But once again, the fiscal year 2021 and forward capital numbers do not contemplate rate increases or any additional bond issues. So, for wastewater in particular, in this fund, as I said, we didn't increase any of the revenues. This will be year five of five of the phase-in of the connection fee increases. For fiscal year 2021, it's the budget that we calculated is based on averages over the past several years, so it looks fairly low. We can obviously augment for those revenues if they come in, but we tend to guess conservatively on those budgets because we just don't know what kind of growth we're going to see. Again, salaries and benefits increased in the wastewater fund by a little over $100,000. And again, services and supplies increased in the wastewater fund by $33,700. And the capital spending plan for wastewater is currently budgeted for $8,500,000. And the next slide shows the detail of that. So this list is projected capital over the next 5 years. If you have specific questions, I'll refer you to Darren or Andy. The one thing I'd like to point out is that after these slides were prepared, we did add in the cost of the asset management program for these three funds. The total is $25,000, and the portion that is applied to the wastewater fund is $9,750. The total bottom line of the capital for 2021 doesn't change, because we reduced the undesignated line in number 16. This slide just shows the totals for each year for capital. And then on to the financial policy calculations for wastewater. With this slide, you can see that the wastewater utility fund is in compliance with each of the adopted financial policies for the city. And that's really all I have for wastewater. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Pam. Same as last time, I'll go around so we're not talking over each other. Randy, you want to go first this time? Any questions?
I'm so sorry. I can't hear you. I'm not sure what's going on with your sound. Did anybody else hear his question?
I do not have a question.
Thank you, Randy. Randy, you can hear me, right? Apparently,
yes.
Okay. People in the room can't hear me?
We can now.
Okay. Thank you. Well, anyway, just to recap, I'd ask Randy if he had any questions, and he said no. Member Scott, do you have any questions?
Yeah, just briefly, Pam, could you reiterate the more recent feedback or information, requests you've had from the board regarding looking ahead at these budgets given the nature of our current COVID-19 situation?
Certainly. I did not make that presentation. Sherry Russell, our CFO, did make that presentation. I did watch, and I did not recall any notes or guidance from the board in that manner. I don't know if Darren has any recollection of
that. Darren Schultz, for the record, Pam, you spoke it. They didn't, for the utility funds, they didn't specifically give a lot of direction in terms of cutbacks or what we'd be looking at. The budget that you saw that Pam presented, that's a budget with no increases, as has been discussed with, you know, what you've been hearing from Far West. So once that gets, or when that gets approved, then we would modify this budget and there would be additional capital funding potentially for fiscal 21. Services and supplies and salaries, depending on what goes on there, you know, they're in the past, they've frozen all salary increases and that type of thing, but no direction has yet been provided in terms of that.
Okay, thank you. That's all I had, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Member Scott. Member Johnson, any questions, comments?
I did have a question. It struck me on, there's a slide there, fiscal summary for enterprise funds for wastewater, water, and stormwater, Pam. And I was just struck by the benefits numbers, just the, if you look 2018-19 actual versus 2021 final budget, just remarkable different trajectory with respect to benefits as compared to salary. Like, you know, just on the wastewater, there's like a 53.8%, almost 54% increase in benefits over from 2018-19 to 2020-21. And then on the salary side, it's 18.4%. Was there some change in accounting treatment or something there?
Yes, yes. With regard to the benefits, there was an accounting pronouncement change a couple years ago that went into effect that affected our balance sheet and our income statement on all of the utility, all of the enterprise funds. Citywide, we had to increase what we were showing for retirement benefits. So that's the primary change there.
And this is some FASB directive or something that changed the accounting for post-retirement benefits?
GASB,
okay. I guess that's for, what is GASB? I know it FASB. What is GASB?
Governmental Accounting Standards Board.
Thank you. That's the only question I have. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Member Johnson. I guess I should say Vice Chair Johnson. I do have one question, Pam. On the wastewater planned capital expenditures, line 16 undesignated for almost $2.8 million. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I'll let Andy handle that question.
Yeah, thanks, Pam. So the undesignated line that you're seeing there is basically the cash reserve in the capital fund. And that's basically just a place to put that for the coming year, to declare it. Yeah. And the ultimate goal, as has been discussed in the rate study, is that money would actually carry forward year to year for potential expansion of the plant in the future.
So it's cash that's being treated as a capital expense? I'm not following the thought process.
Right. So with what happens at the end of every year, we you know, in determining whether or not we're going to meet our financial policies, we look at our ending cash at the end of each year, and we allocate what's necessary for O&M, and then the balance of that goes towards our capital needs. And each of the departments do the best they can to identify the projects that they have and line them out in a nice list like this. But then sometimes there's projects out there that they just haven't quantified yet. And so we put those dollars into an account, and when they, you know, identify the project needs and the dollars, then we can allocate it out appropriately.
Okay, so it is intended to be spent on capital. It's just the project at this point for 2021 is not identified yet.
That's exactly right. Exactly.
Thank you. That is all my questions or comments. Pam, do you have anything else to add?
I do not have anything extra to add to this presentation.
Okay, thank you. I guess for that then, committee, this is an action item. I'm looking for a motion to acknowledge that the wastewater fund is in compliance. Anybody want to make that motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Bruce. I would make that motion.
Thank you, Member Scott. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I will second the motion.
Seconded by Vice Chair Johnston. Any further discussion on the item? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 And aye. Motion passes 400. Thank you for that. It moves us on to item 2E, which is possible action, discussion and possible action regarding the fiscal year 2021 water fund budget's compliance with adopted financial policies and recommending that the Board of Supervisors approve the water fund budget for fiscal year 2021. Pam, back to you.
Thank you. So to start, the same general comments that I made for the wastewater apply to the water and stormwater funds as well. Additionally, with the water fund, in the financial summary packet on page 66, there you can see a decrease in the revenue. This doesn't have to do with rate revenue. This has to do with miscellaneous charges like the private hydrant service and meter box set fees that we reduce just to be conservative. We don't know what the use is going to be. Again, this is year 5 of 5 for the phase-in of the connection fee increase. And once again, it's based on an average over the past several years. In salaries and benefits, there was an increase of $158,000 over fiscal 20. And in services and supplies, increased by $107,000 over estimated fiscal 20. And then capital spending for fiscal 21 is $2.778 million with the details on the next slide. But before we go there, I also wanted to note that this month we'll be paying off the $10.1 million 2010A water bonds with the 2018B water refunding bonds. That's a fiscal year 2020 activity, not 21 budget, but I bring it up because it does affect the cash balance at the end of the year, and it's relevant for financial policy compliance. And I'll mention it again at the last slide. So here are the planned capital expenditures for the water fund for the next 5 years. And again, I just want to mention the asset management program was subsequently added to this plan. The portion of the asset management program cost that applies to the water fund is $14,000. But then once again, there's no change to the total capital for fiscal 21. And here are the totals by year again, just a summary. And then on to the water fund financial policies. Again, the water fund budget actually meets all of the city's adopted financial policy requirements with this budget. The spike in the green capital reserve bar in 2019 represents the increase in the cash balances due to the receipt of the $10.1 million bond from that's the 2018B water refunding bonds, and also the $7 million bond that we got for funding the East-West Transmission Main Project, which is nearly complete. So as I mentioned before, that 2010A $10 million bond will be paid off this month, and we expect to spend the remainder of that $7 million by the end of the year as well. So I just also wanted to point out that with this budget, after the $10 million is paid off and with the capital asset additions and normal principal pay downs, the debt to equity ratio in this fund is projected to meet the financial policies for the first time since we started measuring the debt to equity ratio in 2013. And that's all I have for the water fund at this time. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Pam. Member Scott, I will go to you first this time.
Just Pam, would you explain how the asset management program works? It strikes me as similar to some of the other overhead elements that the city applies to the funds, but how does that benefit our enterprise funds from an asset management perspective?
Member Scott, this is Darren Schultz, if I may. So what we're really trying to do there, we have an asset management program running in the background, as you're familiar with, and in the where's and the why's of what that does. But what we're specifically trying to do in fiscal 21 is to purchase the new software that will manage that asset program. So we did a study and looked at, I think, six different softwares that provide that service, and brought a bunch of people together to review them as to what would fit the best. And we've made a tentative selection, and as a result, the cost of purchasing that software that will then help us perform oversee the asset management, and that's the money that we're talking about. So there was a $10,000 hit to wastewater, and then similar to to water. It's that's their portion. That's the utility's portion of purchasing that software, that asset management software. The general fund has the lion's share portion because there's a lot more assets related to general fund than there are to these enterprise funds.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else, Bruce?
No, that's it. Thanks.
Thank you for that. Vice Chair Johnston?
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. And Member Bowling?
I have no questions. I'm happy to make a motion if you'd like.
Well, I do have one question, and I'll come back to you. So thank you for throwing your hand up first. The planned capital expenditures is noted that the Quill treatment plant would happen in 24-25. We've talked today about pushing that up to possibly 21-22. Would that, and I think we have maybe had enough discussion on this during that earlier presentation by Brent and Alexa, but can you tell me, do you think that is going to have a negative impact on meeting our ability to meet the water fund financial policies?
Yes, I believe that it would impact the debt to equity ratio. So we might see that might not be in compliance if we bond for financing the Quill treatment plant.
Okay, thank you for that. I guess I'll bring it back to you, Randy. Said you wanted to make a motion.
Okay, I move to acknowledge that the water fund budget for fiscal year 2021 is in compliance with the adopted financial policies and to recommend that the Board of Supervisors approve the water fund budget for fiscal year 2021.
I have a motion.
Second.
Is that Member Scott?
Second.
I'm sorry, Bruce, was that you on the second?
I'm sorry, yes, that was me.
Thank you. I have a motion on the second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor, say aye.
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 And I as well. Motion passes 400. Moves us on to item 2F, which is for possible action, discussion and possible action regarding the fiscal year 2021 Stormwater Utility Fund budget's compliance with adopted financial policies and recommending that the Board of Supervisors approve the Stormwater Utility Fund for fiscal year 21. Pam, one more time.
All right, thank you. All right, once again, the general comments apply to the Stormwater Fund. Additionally, I wanted to point out that in fiscal year 20, we have a $905,000 transfer. I just wanted to bring that up because it's a big number in the, if you were looking at the financial summary on page 83, you would see that in the upper one third, kind of in the middle of the page, operating transfers in $905,000 in 2020. And that is from the sale of the Medical Parkway property approved at the December 5th, 2019 Board of Supervisor meeting. So once again, no rate increases, no revenue increases in the Stormwater Fund. Salaries and benefits increased almost $10,000 over fiscal year 20. Services and supplies decreased $3,200 from estimated fiscal 20. And the capital outlay planned for fiscal 21 is $1,475,000. And the detail of that is here on this slide. And once again, with this one, the capital, the asset management system was added in subsequent to the preparation of this slide, and the amount allocated to the stormwater fund for that is $1,250. And that is taken out of the undesignated line at the bottom, line 16. And these are the totals by year for the capital plan. And then in the financial policies, the tall green bars for capital reserves in 2018 and 2019 reflect the receipt of the 4.8 million stormwater bonds that were received in late fiscal 18. So I think it was April of fiscal 18 that they were received. And it was mostly unspent still in 2019. We expect most of that to be spent in 2020. And if it's not, it will roll forward into 2021. But with that, the Stormwater Fund does meet all of the financial policies set forth by the city. And are there any questions? That's all I have for stormwater.
Thank you, Pam. Vice Chair Johnston, you want to go first this time?
Thank you. I have no questions.
Thank you for that. Member Bowling?
No questions.
Member Scott?
No questions.
Thank you. I have more comment than question. I just want to point out that I appreciate that the city's meeting our goal, our financial policy goals on the stormwater fund, but I also want to point out that that is with an abbreviated capital improvement program for the coming years. I look forward to seeing how we can expand that capital improvement program and still continue to meet our policy objectives. So with that, I'm going to bring it back to the committee for a motion. Anybody want to make a motion?
I'd be happy to.
Go for it, Member Bowling.
Mr. Chairman, I move to acknowledge that the Stormwater Utility Fund budget for fiscal year 2021 is in compliance with the adopted financial policies and to recommend that the Board of Supervisors approve the Stormwater Utility Fund budget for fiscal year 2021.
I have a motion by Member Bowling. Can I get a second?
I second that motion.
Second by Vice Chair Johnston. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor, say aye.
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 And aye. Motion passes 4-0-0. That moves us along to agenda item 2G, which is information only, presentation and discussion of Manager's report on personnel, projects, and planning. Darren, you want to pick this one?
Yeah, Darren Schultz, for the record. I'm going to let Andy and Eddie give updates on the funds there. So we'll turn it over to them. Thank you.
All right, I'll go ahead here. This is Eddie Qualieri, Water Utility Manager. Want to start with staffing. And I'm proud to announce that we're fully staffed at the moment. That's been hasn't happened, I think, since I've been here for the last 2 years. So that's exciting news. We've moved some people around, some distribution operators went over to the production side or the treatment side. We call it production, but so that's been a lot more training involved for those employees, but the overall goal is to build a better operator so they have knowledge in distribution and production. So that's going along with our goals. And we also had two employees that did work here and moved on, come back to work in the distribution side. So we're bringing back some knowledge, so we're not starting off from ground zero on those two employees. So that's been helpful as well. And then on current, I'm going to move on to current construction projects. The east-west transmission main is almost done. We're waiting on the Ormsby booster pump station that had to have some modifications, so that's in transit. We also are waiting for the contractor to pass one section of pressure test for the transmission main. Other than that, it's all wrapped up. And then I'm just going to go through other projects out there on the street that you may see where water and, of course, sewer has involvement in. Namely, the South Carson Street project is going on. There's a lot of water lowerings associated with storm drain piping. There's a lot of tie-ins to existing piping from the new piping. So that's kept us busy and on our toes. But the underground work on that is going well and underway. The Fairview Road project should be kicking up in June, I believe. And that's the same contractor that's doing the South Carson Street project. So there's some good savings there and coordination. Oregon Street project, and also in coordination with the South Carson Street project, is kicking up here in mid-May. So you'll be seeing that out there. That has some water lowerings involved with it. And also Airport Road is another project that you all have probably seen out there. It has to do with water and sewer line replacements. And then moving on to future projects going to bid here soon. We have a Viking Sherman water line replacement project. We have our Well 3 equipping project going to bid soon. That's on the new Well 3 we drilled last summer. We'll be equipping the well house and tying that into the system. Prison Hill Booster Pump Station, I know I've presented on that before. That's going to bid soon. We're wrapping up the design on that. We are also planning on replacing the Road to Quill water treatment plant. If any of you have taken the tour, you know the condition of that road. So we'll be using grindings from South Carson Street for that as a base. So trying to find some savings there. We also have two well rehabs in the work coming soon here this summer. Well 5, we're going to do a rehab, pull the pump and motor and rehab it. That's on Bath and Pyrenees. And then Well 54 in Fuji Park, we plan to rehab that well as well. So those are the main projects and future projects. And I'll kick it off to Andy.
Thanks, Eddie. Andy Hummel, wastewater utility manager. For the record, from a staffing standpoint, since the UFOC met last, we've added three members to on the wastewater side. One was a replacement for retirement on our sewer crewman, then an operator that we replaced. Gentleman resigned in January, and then a mechanic that another replacement that just started this morning. So as of today, also fully staffed. We do have another retirement announced, Todd Mitchell, our sewer crew foreman. So that'll be short-lived on being fully staffed, but we are already searching for his replacement, so that should be hopefully a smooth transition. As far as projects go, our reuse master plan is underway. We're in the
data gathering and review phase on that, as well as meetings with all of our current users. For the most part, that's, we've managed to keep that moving even with the COVID-19 and not being able to necessarily meet face-to-face with people, but has slowed us up a little. Eddie touched on a lot of our rehab projects. The big one I did want to touch on again, Airport Way, that one. Big one for the sewer side, so apologize for those delays, but from a system standpoint, we will be better when that's done. Our CCTV, closed caption video recording of the sewer pipeline project, that's going well and is almost complete for this year, getting a lot of good data out of that one, which will feed into our asset management program on the when that's done to really help guide us on the CIP development in the future and what lines, you know, we need to be looking at before others in terms of replacement and rehab. And then the other big one, our Riverview lift station, that one will be going out to bid here soon, which would be a good one to get that one rehabbed and fixed. So from my standpoint, that's what I've got on the wastewater side. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Eddie. I guess that moves us on to future agenda items. And as part of that discussion, I wanted to bring up, I cannot recall, or I haven't looked while we've been on the on this meeting here. Do we have any future meetings planned?
This is Darren weighing in, and we did not schedule dates for the remainder of calendar year 20. So those have not been set. So we kind of will be need to do that. You know, an overview of kind of 19 and leading up to this has been the focus on the rates, both stormwater, which we've covered in the last four meetings, and then water and wastewater. So moving forward, we don't, I'll let see if Andy and Eddie know of something specifically, but we don't have specific items that would come before this committee in the real near future. We do typically after the budget closes for fiscal 20, which is the new budget starts July 1. We do, finance does come back and give a report on the closeout of the previous year, but that wouldn't happen until the fall. So
we can just schedule a fall meeting in the coming months?
I think rather than try and put something on the calendar today, we would reach out end of summer to the committee and look for dates to conduct that meeting. Having said that, if there's anything from any of the members that they would like a report on or to be brought back, we could either add it to that meeting in the fall, or if it's urgent and we needed to do it sooner, we could.
Well, I could go back to the item that Member Bowling brought up in his minutes. I know today was a long agenda, so it probably wasn't appropriate today, but to walk through the process of how CIP projects make it to the list or don't make it to the list. I think we should probably have a discussion about that. Committee members, anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, this is Bruce Scott. I think we're probably going to want to see where we are after three or four more months of social distancing and limited or impacted income. Hopefully it doesn't have a huge impact on our utilities, but that probably ought to be a checkpoint for us to think about when we have our next meeting.
Noted. Thank you, Member Scott.
As part of that, I think we can, it would be a good time, we'd be able to report back as to where we are with the actual start of the rates for both water, wastewater, and stormwater, hopefully we would have a little, well, we will know more, obviously, then as to, so we could report back on that as well.
Okay. If there's nothing else to add, I guess we'll close that item. And it moves us to the final public comment. So I'll open it again. The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Utility Finance Oversight Committee, including any matter that is not specifically included on the agenda as an action item. No action may be taken on a matter raised under public comment unless the item has been specifically included on the agenda as an item upon which action may be taken. Is there any public comment?
Mr. Chair, I do not see any public comment.
Thank you for that. So with that, we'll close public comment and move this on to item 5, which is to adjourn. Who wants to make a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
That's it. Thank you, Randy. We're adjourned. Thank you, everybody.